So, good afternoon, everyone. Lovely to see you all. Even though I don't know most of you, it's still nice to see you. So with the meditation practice, so what do you hope to achieve by learning to meditate? And naturally, the standard reason that most people practice is to, at least to get some peace of mind, some resistance to stress, and more sort of like a balanced emotional perspective. And but the thing is with meditation, you can probably see maybe a dozen qualities which arise with the practice, like over time, the kind of qualities that'll tend to permeate and go right through your personality. Because even though meditation is quite a simple practice, it may be sort of reasonably complicated to work with, because you're dealing with your thoughts and feelings and views and opinions and the complexity of personality. So all sorts of things can come up for people, their childhood stuff and their teenage stuff, and just years and years of conditioning and habits and ideas and beliefs. And that's just like part of the process. So as one learns to practice, you're going to get all this stuff which comes up for you, all your like attachments, emotional attachments, so to speak. And so during this process, as your personal stuff comes up into consciousness, that it's going to teach you a few things, teach you a thing or two, because the whole nature with the understanding, the development of meditation involves understanding the nature of the mind, like how you tick, how your personality works. Because if you can't see exactly what's going on, with your personality dynamics, how can you essentially let things go and allow the mind to go to peace? So, as one particular abbot called this, say, process, like, when people were having a difficult time with the practice, maybe the monks or nuns, that, he would call it, say, purification by fire. But hopefully for most of us, we won't necessarily be going in that particular direction, because there's all sorts of little tricks, little methods that you can use to soften the mind and, reduce the rough edges and just make it a bit more of a a pleasant experience, a pleasant abiding. But as you go, say, into oneself, and your different like states of mind come up, you may have to refer to the Buddha's teaching on an irregular basis to sort of get a grasp what may be happening for you. And so, for example, just a classic in a nutshell, when people run into, difficulties, if you just look at the Four Noble Truths, where there's, unsatisfactoriness, the cause, the end, and the path. So, if I happen to have some suffering on some level, like why am I suffering? Why am I so concerned about that person's behavior, the way they treat someone? Do they not meet your expectations? They behave in a manner which is not conducive for your welfare and benefit, but which they can actually do even unknowingly, because especially with the meditators, they're far more sensitive than the average person walking the street. and you know, certain things which the average person won't even see. You know, meditators may be quite sort of sensitive to, they get affected. But, you know, you can make the mind, you know, quite peaceful, but also quite, say, firm, and where it's got a degree of, like, solidity. I kind of, like, a practice that I'm actually doing at the moment is I do, say, like, a block of metta, you know, say, like, loving kindness for oneself, and then I follow with the, say, like, a block of, say, body contemplation mantra. So you have metta mantra, and then you have body contemplation mantra, which makes the mind a bit more firm and solid, because, you know, metta does make people quite soft, but you can, you know, you can firm up the mind with the body practices to a degree. You can just do them on a very just a very superficial level to get this kind of psychological firmness, you know, because there's all sorts of principles, you know, where, you know, like where you focus, you know, like in the body, and you know, whether you do, you know, whether it's metta, compassion, breathing, walking, meditation, they have has a slightly different effect on one's mind, on one's emotional makeup. And, you know, say, for example, you know, when people are you know, when they're going through very, very heavy difficulties, if you breathe into the full chest and you watch all the feelings in the full chest as you breathe in and out of the body, it has this it's a more light, spacious meditation, but it has the ability to help, say, release and unlock say feelings, you know, if a person gets blocked or stuck, or, you know, they've got a real issue with something or someone. You can essentially, you know, raise those feelings up into consciousness much more effectively and release them than using this a much more tight and focused point of attention. So, you know, with every kind of practice that you might do. Now, you see, you've got roughly about 40, you know, 40 key subjects of meditation, but you know, there's like variations on a theme. So, you know, when you practice, it's good to practice in a way which is conducive, beneficial for you. So, you know, if you see that, you know, regardless of whatever mode of meditation that you do, that it gives rise to a sense of peace, stability, and like letting go to a degree, you know, relaxation. You definitely feel much more at ease within oneself. Then, you know, you're moving in the right direction. But if you're getting more and more angry, more and more possibly feelings, you know, like revengeful feelings, or even, you know, possibly even hatred, you know, even coming back from 5-10 years, you may have to adjust your approach in relation to the emotions which come up. So what we'll do with this particular session, we'll put a like a positive spin on this one, and we'll use the positive perceptions of the breath. So what happens here, this is a technique Ajahn Brahm used to use years ago. And, yeah, you can do them easily in half a dozen different ways. And what it is, it's a matter of looking at the breath with a positive perception, like the breath is, you know, you look at, you know, you develop this attitude of looking at the beautiful breath, or looking at the happy or joyful breath, or looking at the changeable breath, or it could be blissful, peaceful. It's a mode of looking. So as you look at other people, or as you look at could be like even kittens or puppies, or, you know, if you like, possibly even fast motorcycles, you know, you have this perception, this like an attitude of looking, of seeing, and with that kind of positive, say, spin on the breath, that you have an ability to tranquilize the breath much more easily, because, you know, when you develop these, say, like positive feelings, you know, this so like soft positive feelings, that the mind calms down much more quickly. You know, you're able to hold your attention much more effectively, because the meditation is it's a pleasant thing, a pleasant experience that you're engaging in. So we'll make a start. So if you just get yourself in a comfortable position, so, you know, make sure your back is nice and straight, and you know, if you're able to, you know, when you cross one's ankles and have one's hands together in the lap, it helps draw both the bodily and the mental energies like inwards. You know, it's something that you feel. If your arms and legs are all over the place, the quality of the meditation isn't as focused. It isn't as in, say, like insular. And just make sure there's nothing tight around the throat, the neck, the waist, and then as you say, so we'll start with we'll use a fairly sharp focus. So what I want you to do is focus on the feelings around the mouth, and it's a fairly sharp focus, but you can feel the sensations around the mouth quite distinctly. And so as you breathe in and out, I want you to develop this attitude of the beautiful breath. So as you're breathing in and out, so as you focus on the mouth, you can feel the breathing on the periphery. I want you to look at the breathing as something which is, say, could be, say, beautiful or joyful. And what happens when you develop that kind of attitude? Now you develop those corresponding feelings which are in line with that perception, that way of seeing. So just close your eyes, and as you breathe in and out, just look at that breath as a beautiful object or a joyful object. And maybe over the space of couple of minutes, 5 minutes, you'll start to see that corresponding feeling arise in the mind. So as the meditation continues, just try to relax both physically and emotionally as much as possible. Feel a bit tired or sleepy, just try to breathe as deeply as possible. So as the meditation continues, just see if you can see that that beautiful perception arising with the breath. So if any of you have difficulty raising that feeling, that beautiful feeling with the breath, another perception that you might find easier to work with is radiate a sense of, say, love towards the breath. So as the breath rises and falls in the body, I want you to just radiate this soft feeling of love towards the breath. So, you know, as you love your boyfriend or girlfriend, or you love little kittens and puppies, or your favorite auntie, just radiate that very soft, warm feeling towards the breath. It may be more conducive for some people. can't stop thinking or get the mind quiet, just switch to the insight practice. Try to understand the thoughts and feelings which are arising in the mind, you know, who they're connected with, what, you know, what person, what event, and you know, what reason. Because the more you understand, like different mind states, the easier it is for the mind to let them go. So we're coming towards the end of the meditation. So just see if you can see any change in the peacefulness of the mind. I'll ring the gong 3 times. You can open your eyes when you're ready. So we have Sudamsu from the USA. Would meditation on the breath cause good karma by itself, or would metta practice create good karma by itself? So as many of you know, the process of karma is generated from moment to moment by one's actions of, you know, body, speech and mind. So if you're working with, say, the meditation, and you bring about, say, like a positive change in one's mind state, more, say, maybe more peacefulness, more relaxation, less negativity, less hate, less anger, I'd consider that to be good karma, because what happens is as you shape the characteristics of the mind in a good way, you also shape the intention, you know, the intentions that actually flow from the mind, because as you come from the center of your awareness, your attention moves out, and then it forms thought, and it can potentially break into speech, break into bodily action. So if you increase the quality of the mind in a positive way, you could consider that good karma. And metta practice would do that even more so, because you're really focusing in on the development of the loving kindness meditation, you know, which is the soft, friendly, fluffy kind of practice. And so for example, if you had somebody who did metta for even 60 seconds, you know, it's a very simple practice, but it's quite a strong practice. Even 60 seconds, and somebody did that for 7 days, you would actually see a change in the personality, in the attitude of that person, in relation with them. You'd definitely notice that. And we have Wikande from New Zealand. How do you prevent unwholesome thoughts, feelings, and flashbacks like guilt, anger, and annoyance from everyday life disturb you while meditating? So if you zero in and you identify the feelings, the negative feelings that one goes through, and just look at the category they're in, because when you're dealing with difficult stuff, bad stuff coming up from the past, it's best to go to the Brahmaviharas, because the Brahmaviharas are very, very specific meditations. They're emotionally based meditations to work with difficult states. So metta is the antidote for anger. Say anger and hatred. You've got an overlap effect, but its primary antidote is for angry states of mind. And compassion, the compassion meditation is the antidote for cruelty, which is that feeling where you want to hurt someone. Yeah, it could be like revenge, getting back. This kind of type of experience. So, and when you do that, for example, a very quick way to deal with this kind of thing is you do it for 5 minutes solid. So, if you're disturbed by this kind of emotions, you do the loving kindness meditation. It could be like, may I be happy, successful, and confident. You can do these mantras 1,000 different ways. You choose the words which are important to you, and to make it strong and firm, because these meditations to make people soft, you want a degree of psychological strength with these meditation, because you're moving in the world, you're mixing with all sorts of different people. You could be a policeman, you could be a drug counselor, you could be working in the prison system. So you want a firm, fairly strong state of mind. You want the positivity you want the, say, protection against anger, hatred, and whatnot, and happiness, positivity, joyfulness. To make it firm, you do it continuously. So, say for example, if I had really strong feelings of revenge towards someone from the past, could be 5 years, 10 years back, and it keeps coming up, the repressed stuff, deeper down, it even could come from family, you know, even from dad. You know, one's got very, you know, sort of very unpleasant feelings towards the father. So, you know, the compassion meditation is you identify the difficult emotion, could be revenge. May I be free, say, from, could be anger, hatred and revenge. You know, may I be free from, say, vindictiveness and pettiness. You know, whatever you can identify the emotions as. Compassion is, may I be free from that afflictive state. The loving kindness meditation, the characteristics are, you know, it's like positivity, happiness, friendliness. You know, you have this sense of goodwill towards oneself, towards other people. You like other people much more easily. You know, very easy to like people compared to like previously one likes oneself. So. No spaces between the words. You make it quite strong, and then just do it very, very slowly. And you know, for people who have major trouble in this area, do it for 5 minutes straight, continuously, like a continuous mantra. Just very relaxed, very relaxed. And then go to the breath meditation, and you know, you'll see the difference straight away. You look at the state of your mind, you look at the intensity of the emotions. Before the meditation, and then you look at the state of the mind straight after the loving kindness, or say metta meditation, compassion, and you should see, especially after 5 minutes continuous, you should see a difference. And if you do that for 7 days straight, you know, you'll be probably quite surprised just how effective it is. Even in myself, if I do that, this kind of meditation in different ways. Even just 60 seconds, just continuously for 1 minute, you can see that that positive energy for 24 hours without difficulty. So it's very, very simple, but it's really got some strength to it. But you do it in a way which makes you which has got like a sense of firmness, psychological strength, because you know, when you use big spaces between the words, you get very, very soft. My brother is a bit of a tough guy. He was interested in positive thinking, developing in happiness, and he did this kind of practice, you know, like on the way to work for about 20 minutes solid, big spaces between the words. But he found, you know, because he was mixing with a fairly rough bunch of young blokes, with his workplace, that he felt, he was so soft, he felt basically like overpowered by the personalities that he was working with. So, you know, he said just straight up, he said, I don't like this practice. He said, it just makes me just too soft. You know, he used to be a boxer, martial artist, and pushed weights for years. So so you do it continuously. You make it strong. It's got some real firmness to it. Phoenix from USA, I've heard people say that during meditation, they feel life. They've experienced other worlds. I've heard people say that during meditation, they feel like they experience other worlds. And some said they come up against scary feelings. What is that? What is going on? So they feel like they experience other worlds. Well, there's a possibility that you could get flashback to past lives. So it depends on your past spiritual development, especially like the psychic development. So all psychic, if you at a grassroots level, There are different ways to psychic potential, but one of the core principles is deep meditation, profound meditation is the causal factor. Good quality samadhi, good quality, very, very deep, peaceful, profound states of mind are a basis for generating psychic phenomena. You know, the Buddha said it in the suttas, and that's a reality principle. When you talk with the forest masters in Thailand, Burma, and you'll have enlightened, probably a handful of enlightened people in Sri Lanka. I'm not very familiar with the Sri Lankan fraternity, but you'll definitely have a handful of people. And And some say they come up against scary feelings. And depending, so for example, you could have been in a past life, you could have been, maybe you could have been on the African, you could have been reborn as a, it could be something like even say like a deer or a small creature on the plains of South Africa, and you're just living in this predatory environment where you're constantly alert to danger. Your life is basically under threat continuously by large predators which surround you, and it's quite possible if you can have that ability to tap into those memories, that may be your experience from that past life. So even things like I knew someone who was a particular person who was quite paranoid, but it was like it wasn't, the person was never diagnosed with say mental health issues, but they were definitely the paranoia was definitely over the boundary. It was even small things, they get paranoid, they would worry, they get fearful, and this guy's, he's a fairly big guy, and you could put things down, so for example, like understanding the principle of karma within the Buddhist teaching, even things like you could have been a butterfly or a grasshopper, and like a small creature, and just that constant state of alertness, the constant state that your life is going to be taken at any minute. If you can't see, these are just small examples. So you could have a situation where if a person gets affected by, say, like features of say, like, mental health features, and you just can't see anything in the current life, it could be say, like a cause and effect. It could be something which is coming full circle from the past life. Say, for example, you were a person who was in a state of power and authority, and you frightened and intimidated other people. You could have been a person in the military. You could have been a person in a royal court with real powers to make to place people in prison, to take their lives, to have them hanged if you wished. You could have been a nobleman. You could have been a king. You could just snuff somebody out just because you felt like it. And so, for example, you could have frightened, intimidated people in a past life. And what happens is it comes full circle. So whatever energy you project towards other people will be projected towards you. So you end up, even though there's nothing in the current life, and one of your family members used to be a psychiatric nurse, and they know that there's no history. You've got no history at all. But you get paranoid and you get fearful just over the smallest things, and so you can place it down to that things like being reborn as small creatures, vulnerable creatures, being in a position like frightening other people, being maybe threatening the lives of other people. So whatever your experience is, in a simplistic way to understand it, is you've done that to other people, you've done that to other beings, and now it's come full circle, and you're on the tail end of the stick, and now you are being subjected to those feelings that you afflicted other people with, or other beings in some way. So you can put it down to like past karma, past life, and the kind of karma that you're projecting towards others. Was there any other questions at all?
Yep. Bhante, I've got another question about loving kindness meditation. When you're practicing with difficult people, say someone who's a narcissist, may they be well, may they be happy, all those sorts of things that you say. But do you wish the person well in their state, or are you wishing that they develop the wisdom to see the error of their ways and find true happiness rather than, may they be happy that they keep on screwing more people and ripping them off and emotionally abusing them. May they really, be happy and continue. Which, because I think there's a big confusion in Buddhist circles about when you come against difficult people, what you're really wishing for, you know, because these people get very happy by exerting power over people. And are you wishing that they may have more opportunity to exert more power over people and screw those people better and more? Or are you wishing that they may find the wisdom that the limitations of conducting that sort of behaviour and maybe go for the eudaimonia, the life well lived, the Aristotle, you know, idea? Which one is it?
I mean, those kind of people, you don't have to radiate, you don't have to generate metta or compassion or Brahma Viharas for these people at all. If they have that kind of mindset, they have this kind of predatory, manipulative, sociopathic kind of tendencies with their family, friends, you know, just people they come in contact with. If those people have these kind of say unfavorable and I can't think of the right word, but sort of antisocial type of feelings, mentality, because that's what's driving these people. I mean, feeling, our emotions drive all human beings in general, but these people have these unfavorable, unwholesome feelings, which basically transgress other people's boundaries. All of us are a little bit selfish to a degree. But, I mean, how egocentric are we? Each person's different to the next. But these kind of people, they should, if they have those kind of unpleasant, let's say unfavourable emotions, socially unfavourable emotions, if they generate a lot of metta for oneself, if they, say, for example, they've got this kind of, these kind of, and you know, which I can't think of the right words, kind of emotions which are undesirable.
Well, you know, basically,
undesirable emotions.
Narcissistic personalities.
Yeah, exactly. Unfavourable, undesirable type of behaviours, emotions. So once you generate the Brahma Viharas, especially metta and compassion for themselves, because they're working where the problem is. The problem's in here. You don't have to worry about anyone else. And you bring the positive, loving, caring, supportive feelings from here, and you bring them up, you just make them strong. They practice every day. And then eventually the altruistic, caring, supportive, compassionate feelings start slowly. It might take some time. It could take a full year if you're working with someone who's really well set in that category. And maybe full 12 months, those very positive, loving, affirmative feelings, which we find favourable, eventually over time will overpower the narcissistic or egocentric tendencies, because you're looking at this conditioning process, and so over time the positive qualities will eventually come to balance out and potentially overpower the.
So are you talking about, if I'm meditating on someone like Donald Trump, okay, who's a pathological narcissist, are you talking about me practicing metta, or if he was doing it?
If you've got a person who's a narcissist and they know that their behaviour is essentially they create problems for other people with their behaviour, that if they have a genuine interest in changing their personal qualities, they should only do intrinsically, they should start with themselves on the heart level, because that's where the source of their problem is.
But they'll never do that because of the nature of their narcissism. I'm talking about when you sending loving kindness towards a difficult person who is a narcissist. Okay, so they don't want to know about this stuff. They think all this stuff's crap. Okay, but I am sending, how do I send loving kindness to this difficult person who's not committed to change at all? You know, am I wishing for this person to be develop wisdom, or should I just not go anywhere near the person?
You can, you know, if you look at your own mind state and you think to yourself, what am I trying to achieve or accomplish with this individual? You know, it's like, If I look within myself, what exactly do I want to do in relation with this person? If they're a client, but they're quite difficult, you know, what kind of emotions do I need to make it more easier to work with this individual? So you know, you focus on those feelings that you need, or you may want to degenerate, but that may be just to undercut the difficulty with the professional relationship, the client-therapist relationship.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about that. But I'm just talking about someone who's a bully, okay? And leave the client-therapist relationship out of it. Just you're coming across people who are bullies, okay? Now, do you send loving kindness towards the bully? May they be happy and kind and enjoy, you know?
You can if you want to, if you find it. If it works for you, if it gives you, I don't know, if you find some benefit from it, but it's not going to change. With some people, it possibly might change the behaviour just ever so slightly, but they've got to be sensitive to this kind of energy.
What's the purpose of doing the meditation? Am I doing it to try and affect change in the other person, or trying to affect change in myself to be better placed in the world, in the presence of this individual?
Well, you're better off working on oneself first. So whatever difficulties, limitations that we find within ourselves, we try to work with that, and if we're quite at ease, balanced, and whole within ourselves, it makes it much easier to deal with other people and their stuff.
Yeah. Well, what that usually means in these sorts of situations is what they call fierce compassion. In other words, compassion that has a lot of power behind it. You just don't take any crap from these people. You actually set very firm boundaries, and you don't do all the soft wussy stuff or the oozy stuff, you know. But you can be polite and compassionate, but you know, it's a very different approach from thinking about little soft kittens.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, let's see. it's a bit of a tricky one, but you know, it all depends what you want to do it for in the first place. I mean,
yes.
You know, I mean, why do you want to do it? You know, say for example, you're up against a narcissist or a bully or whatnot. Someone who's got like maybe some kind of antisocial behaviour. You can do as much metta for them as you like.